opening to order. Chris, would you take the roll?
Council President Cardoza?
Here.
Council Member Jones?
Here.
Council Member Boobin Vonderhaar?
Here.
Council Member McPherson?
Here.
All right, very good. So this is our 5:30 workshop for discussion on setting of fees and ex parte and quasi-judicial. Richard Roach.
Good evening, Mayor. Council, for the record, Richard Roats. The question came up, I believe, related to the setting of fees for one of our current resolutions and the distinction between the fee setting of that, where the process was to hold the public hearing on the same day that the resolution was presented to council for its adoption, versus what had historically been done, where we had a meeting to advise and discuss with council the fee increase, and then we set the public hearing at a later date and have the resolution at that time, but council had an advanced discussion on that. Idaho Code 63-1311A, advertisement of and hearing on fee increases, states, no taxing district may make a decision approving a fee increase that is in excess of 5% of the amount of the fee last collected, or a decision imposing a new fee unless it holds a hearing upon such proposed fee increase or fee imposition at a regular or special meeting of the district's governing body and after it gives public notice of such hearing in the manner provided in this section, which is basically the advertising in the paper. Converting that to relevant to our venue, essentially what it says is city council shall not adopt a resolution where a new fee is imposed or a fee increase is 5% or greater without a hearing and public notice. So essentially what is controlled then is the decision itself, which is when that resolution is adopted by council. We changed the policy, or the policy was changed where we basically took the one hearing and put it onto the day with the public hearing. We can do it either way. There's absolutely zero case law interpreting this because it's pretty clear. It's talking about the decision of the governing board, which is, in your case, again, the resolution that would be adopting it. And I think probably from expediency purposes, having that discussion on the day of the public hearing seems to make sense. Basically, what the proposal is that staff would make the presentation to council as to the methodology used in coming up with that fee, and then the public would be able to comment on that, and then you guys would vote on that, and we would do it all in one session, and it would, I think, lend to transparency. We hadn't discussed it, but your mind had not been made up, although it's not part of the decision. I think it just lends itself to an easier way to do it. Distinctly different from what comes up at the budget hearing, which is controlled by a different Idaho code section. We do those workshops that are not mandated by the statute. Only the public hearing for the adoption portion of that is what's mandated, but those are different. So, again, relevant to our situation is the decision that's made, which has to be made after the public hearing. We go back to the way we did it if you prefer, but I think for transparency and time, it makes more sense just to do it all at the same hearing. And most of the time, I can't think of an instance where we actually had somebody from the public come in and comment on these. And very few times have there been questions from council as to that, especially if we have explained the methodology. So I will stand for any questions.
Okay, questions for Richard.
Richard, if we set a fee in the public that we publish,
Is there any leeway to change that fee without republishing?
You mean if we notice, like, I think what you're saying is not if we set a fee, but if we have a published proposed fee, is that right?
Yeah.
And then at the public hearing and when we talk about it, we decide we want it to be something different than what was published, do we need to republish? Did I get it?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
No, there's all that has to happen is that public hearing before the adoption of the fee and the notice given that there's either a new fee or the fee is going to be 5% or greater than the fee. So whatever it's going to be, if we came in and asked for more than the fee, 10%, and explained our methodology, if you as council member wanted to increase it 20%, is that what your question
correct.
Is? Above and beyond what staff's recommendation is for that?
Beyond what was published, well, I think is the main concern.
Yes.
Yeah, it would be appropriate then to re-notice that because it would be 5%. Well, it would be higher than what was published, which would be public because of the 5% or the new fee. The new fee probably, I guess we would probably do that in either case.
So we would incur a second cost to republish the proposed fee with the change?
Yes.
Just to clarify, a fee setting is a legislative action, not a quasi-judicial action.
Correct.
Does any ex parte communication disclosures need to be made on a legislative action?
They do not have to be.
So am I allowed to discuss a fee prior to a public hearing with a constituent?
You are, but you can't make up your mind on that fee, and you can't indicate that, okay, I'm going to do that, or that's a good idea. Can take their input. Now, it's always good to have them come to the council meeting and make that or disclose that just in the issue of transparency, that you have this communication and citizen X would like this for this reason or that reason, but it's a legislative matter and those conversations do not fall under the quasi-judicial restrictions. Again, my advice would be sure that you don't say anything that says, okay, I'll go along with that, because then you've made up your mind and you're not making a decision at or after the public hearing. And secondarily, if they want to approach you to make comment about it, it certainly would be appropriate for you to request that they come to the council meeting and let council know, because you can't make your decision. And if their conversation or words have some wisdom, procedural limitations under the quasi-judicial, but there are transparency issues that obviously should be brought forward to council to let them know because it's a legislative matter.
So hypothetically, if conversations were taking, we have done no wrongdoing by just not disclosing that discussion?
Correct. As long as you haven't made up your decision and expressed that to them.
I know we've had discussion regarding perception regarding quasi-judicial, as in just the perception of me possibly having a conversation sides with the, does not side with me, it sides with the opposition. Would that be the case on a legislative action?
I'm trying to understand your question. Somebody approaches you.
Well, obviously, on a quasi-judicial matter, if somebody approaches me and I do not disclose that, that would actually probably, in best interest, require me to recuse myself. Would that situation apply during a legislative action, that if I've had that conversation and or any conversation took place, would I have to recuse myself if that was not disclosed?
You wouldn't have to, again, as long as you're clear to the person. What I'm trying to avoid is you saying, oh, yeah, that's a good idea, or I agree, and then that giving the perception that you've made up your mind, because that's what's critical is that decision has to be made after the hearing. So if you led them to believe that you've made up your mind, and obviously it's, it would be somebody opposing the taken, and then they're coming in and saying, I had this conversation with Mr. Jones, and he told me he already made up his mind because this is what he told me. So, again, remember that the distinction is what's required and what's in the best interest of the city.
No,
it's legislative. There probably shouldn't be a reason why you don't either ask that person to come to the hearing and testify, or at least document it and let us know that it occurred. As you know, as I know, that it doesn't always happen on the legislative, but you don't want to be gathering all those people get that ear and come voice that to you 24/7 and try to influence your decision before coming in here and making that decision.
How would one distinguish that their mind has not been made up if there is no input at a public hearing?
When you say no input,
there's no members of the public that came here and spoke in regarding the legislative action. And I have no additional information to make up my mind. Wouldn't my mind be already made up before I got here then?
Presumably, what you will have is your packet. It will have the proposal and then staff's presentation, and those are the facts that you will be able to go upon as, is this a fair method in determining what this fee should be? And you can certainly question staff at that time if you have questions, or you can then debate it amongst yourselves and make the decision. I think this is fair, or I don't like this about this. Maybe we send it back and we do this, you know, whatever. I mean, it's not intended to be an automatic. It's intended that staff makes its report. If the public appears, they either testify in support of or against it, and then you guys deliberate to make your decision. So it's really no different than the other decisions that you have to make, that you decide, you express your viewpoint one way or the other on why you like it, and then you reach your decision. If they haven't elected to come to testify or make a statement on in favor or opposition, then you have those facts before you, which are typically going to be staff's presentation.
And as a council member, would be making that decision based on what I think is best for the public or on the public's behalf.
Certainly can be one of your factors, depending on what the fee is for. If it's intended to be, we've tried to be cognizant of fees need to be reasonable, and oftentimes we're not going to collect what it costs to actually run the program, but just charge a little bit. I think a lot of our fees for however many years we have a $2 in perpetuity business license fee, and it took staff more time just to try to figure those things out. So we try to be cognizant of that. Obviously, there's a cost around the city, and there's the folks that use the resources.
So in your mind, as our attorney, we have done nothing wrong in the past the way we've done it in the past?
Correct.
Okay.
We haven't made a decision prior to the public hearing. So what happens is the public hearing takes place and then you make your decision, which is how we've done it. It's just when you receive the initial information, and then you, after the public hearing, deliberate, debate, and then pass the resolution.
That's all I had. Thank you.
Okay. Further questions for Richard? Further comment? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Well, that concludes this portion. We will be in recess until the 6 p.m. council meeting. Okay, we'll call this meeting to order. Chris, would you call the roll, please?
Council President Cardoza.
Here.
Council Member Jones.
Here.
Council Member Boobin Vonderhaar.
Here.
Council Member McPherson.
Here. Thank you. If you will join us for the invocation, we have Chris Bent from Calvary Chapel, and then we will follow that up with the Pledge of Allegiance.
Let's pray. Heavenly Father, we are grateful and
so thankful that we live in the United States, that we live in Idaho, that we live in CUNA, where it is still legal and proper and right for us to govern ourselves. And you are allowing that. So we openly invite you to be here to lead and guide the proceedings so that the decisions made tonight would be best for the city as well as its citizens. We thank you, Lord, in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You may be seated. First item, we need to consider to amend the agenda.
I move we amend the agenda to add item 6B under public hearings, public hearing in consideration to approve 16-04-S subdivision, TNT subdivision.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to add under item 6B under public hearings, consideration to approve 16-04-S. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. If there is anyone in the audience that is here for that TNT subdivision, we had a problem with the advertisement on that and getting that ready. So actually all we're going to do once we get to that part is table it for the May 16th meeting. So if there's anyone here waiting on that one in particular, we won't be taking any action on that tonight. Next item is the consent agenda.
Mayor, I had some questions regarding item D2, resolution R34-2017. I'd like to move that to item 7E for further discussion, if I may.
Second.
And I'm sorry, what was that on?
D2, move to 7E.
It's resolution R34-2017.
Okay, the motion's made and seconded to remove item D2, resolution 34-2017 from the consent agenda and add it to item 7E for discussion. Is there any further discussion? Any other questions? We'll entertain a motion.
Motion's on the table already, so just voting.
Motion to move that item. All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries. Anything else on the consent agenda?
I move we approve the consent agenda as amended.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve the consent agenda as amended. Any further discussion? Chris, would you poll the council?
Council President Cardoza?
Yes.
Council Member Jones?
Yes.
Council Member Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Council Member McPherson?
Yes.
Okay, and that motion carries. Next item is community reports and requests. Item A, Young Marine Program presentation. Brandon Ball, if you would just come to the podium, state your name and address for the record.
My name is Brandon Ball, and I'm here to talk about the Young Marines. Thank you guys for letting me do this. So I have a few questions, and one of them is I'm asking permission to be able to use the Senior Center as one of my meeting places, if there's any certain steps I have to do in order to acquire this. Another one of them is I'm in desperate need of help with financial areas for financial support in uniforms and utilities. I need a couple of rifles and some stuff. some flags. So just some financial support, if I could get that from the council and from the community of CUNA. And then one last thing is my major problem is I need a unit commander. And the unit commander needs to be of unit of Marine Corps, retired, active, or reserved.
Okay, Brandon, so maybe you could back up just a little bit, because we did have a Young Marines program in CUNA, and now we don't anymore, and you're looking to start that all back up again, right? So,
yes.
So you're starting from basically ground zero to get this program up and running again?
Yes.
Okay.
Do you have other people that are interested yet, or that's also kind of where you are at this point, ginning up interest and organizing at the same time?
I do have everyone I need. The last person I need is the unit commander, and he needs to do his. That's when his part comes in.
Okay.
The last part.
So how many young Marines have you gathered so far?
So far, I have 17 young Marines that I've gathered myself.
And are they all in the CUNA community or surrounding?
Some of them are and some of them are not.
Can you guess or do you know how many are from CUNA?
I would say roughly 8.
Okay.
From CUNA.
Okay. Do you have a, let's see, what day do you guys do your meetings?
We were going to plan to do it Tuesdays, but we have another unit that's kind of in a competition with me, I guess. They're opposed to it, to me. Starting this up, so they're going to try and move into CUNA. So I'm going to try and move mine to Wednesdays. So if I can move it to Wednesdays, that's what I'm hoping. Just another day that they won't be able to.
And what are the, I guess, how frequently do you meet? And how long are the meetings? Just so we can start to figure out like whether the senior center is available and all that kind of stuff.
They are once a week.
Every week?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We used to do them on Saturdays, but I do know that we can only do those twice a month because the VFW goes there.
Okay.
Saturdays.
What time would you like to start the meeting, or how long does it last?
I would like to start mine from 6:30 to 9:30.
Okay. Okay.
P.M.
Yeah. Have you checked with any of the other facilities in town to see if they're available for any of it, or not yet?
I'm in contact with the VFW of Boise, Post 63. They're going to try and help me. They're my second alternative
okay. For
a place to use. My first one was a senior center, and if that one goes down, I will go to them. But they are aware.
Okay. What about, and you might not have contact people, in which case we could probably help you out with that, but like the community hall or the Grange Hall or any place like that, have you had a chance to check with them yet?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
I was just used to using the senior center, so.
Okay. Got it. Okay. This will be my last question, then I'll be quiet for a little bit. Do you have a specific dollar amount that you were hoping to get, or do you know like what would be uniforms and the other stuff or total?
So I bought mine for $108. I will be charging young Marines to start when they go into recruit training $125 to give me that extra, the extra money that they give us for other stuff for our unit. I don't have any requirement for anything. I just will take whatever I can get.
Can you tell us more about what the young Marines do? Like, what normally with your activities, would you be doing any sort of community improvement activities, or would you be interested in doing those additionally in exchange for some sort of a donation?
We do a lot of community service. We're actually really based on giving back to the community, especially for if they're going to let us use a building. We're going to give back to them in any way possible. We use the police department as community service. We go to them, whatever they need, we do it for them. We technically fall under the city or the town, and if they ask for something to be done, Young Marines is a go-to people that would be willing to always step up.
Okay.
Okay. Further questions?
Brandon, have you approached the Marine Corps Reserve out at Gowland Field, see what they could do for you?
I have. Not all of them are. Actually, only one of them was on board, but he is not above the age of 25. He is 20. His name is Tyrell Reynolds. He cannot, but the rest of them can't. They say that they're too busy for it, and they just, they have too much going on for themselves, so that's why we look for DFW members.
Can they provide you with any uniforms, or?
They may be able to, but because it's a reserve unit, and most units are, because most Marine Corps units are out, are usually out of state, they don't have very much uniforms, because these are outdated uniforms. Young Marines use them because that's how we get them donated to us, are from the actual bases themselves. And the reserved base out at Gowan will not have these ones. They're down to digis now.
Okay. Thank you. Semper Bi.
Brandon, you stated that there was another Young Marines group that wanted to come to CUNA?
They're not. Yes, they. So I had talked to them because I had to go through them to get approval. They are giving me approval if I like to call it building a bridge with them. I have to be able to send my Young Marines for my first time to them. I don't know if I want to do that. They want to come here because the unit commander told me that he doesn't think a 17-year-old can accomplish something like this. So that gave me even more of a push to do it. So they are trying to, they're going to try and come here. I don't know when. I do have a friend who is like an inside guy with them, and he tells me if they're coming here or not. So they're going to try and come in and sit on the council and like try and be part of community service, you know, try and get me to leave this area. And they're going to try, but I'm not going to compete. I'm going to do what I can to be better for myself, not to compete against others.
Thank you.
Very good. So when you get to the point that you are ready for funding, and that would it be appropriate for us to maybe help you to have fundraisers and see what we can do to raise some money throughout the community and that type of thing? Is that kind of what you're looking for?
Yes, anything that I can get from the council or any of the city of CUNA would be great for me.
Okay.
How soon are you hoping? Can you have meetings before you get your CO or no?
I can, but I cannot call it a Young Marine meeting because okay. They're not a unit yet,
yeah.
So I cannot do that, but I can have meetings with the adults and with the Young Marines, with recruits, and let them know that this is what's going on.
Yeah.
But I haven't thought that far.
So when were you hoping to start using the senior center, or is that still kind of up in the air depending on if you can find somebody?
My goal was to have it done by June 20th.
Okay.
Was to have my whole unit started up by June 20th, if not no later than July 4th.
Okay. Can we plan to get some additional info on, like, just make sure we have, like, all the dates and times that you're hoping to use it? I just want to have a really clear idea of what's being asked for, so then maybe we can also discuss, and when I say we, I mean council, with you if you want. You know, if we have upcoming events and things like that where we would need actual manpower to do whatever. I mean, if we can save money on specific city things, to me that makes sense to give you guys a donation. Like, it would be basically us, you know, paying maybe less than we would otherwise have to pay city staff to get some stuff done. So that, I mean, that makes sense to me if it's something that you guys would be interested in doing. So maybe I'll email with Chris a little bit just to see what we can come up with, and then if you can make sure that she has your contact info, we can see where to go from there. Is that okay, Joe?
Yeah,
okay.
Perfect.
Does that sound good?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Very good. Any further questions?
Thank you.
All right, we will see what we can do for you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Brandon. Appreciate it very much. Public hearings. The next item on the agenda is a public hearing to consider and consideration to approve 16-03-S subdivision and 16-06AN annexation. JUB Engineers representing Coleman Real Estate Holdings, LLC. Trevor Kessner, planner. We did have a sign-up sheet for this. We'll open the public hearing in a minute. Is there anyone in the audience who didn't get a chance to sign up on this who wishes to? Okay, thank you.
Trevor?
Mayor, thank you. Chairman, or excuse me, council members, I apologize. This application for you tonight is seeking an annexation and preliminary plat approval for the Winfield Springs subdivision. It's reflected in the staff report that the applicant proposes 342 single-family home lots and 33 common lots for a total of 375 total lots. The common lots consist of approximately 12.6% of the entire site. That's actually 14 acres of the existing 111.18-acre site. The Winfield Springs development provides new roadway connections and improvements abutting the site, and this would be the extension of Ardell from its current location easterly to the highway, and this would also bring K Avenue north from its current location at the Deer Flat and K intersection. So it's putting two new mid-mile collectors through for this. It's also bringing pedestrian and bike connections to and throughout the project with the inclusion of an additional proposed pathway along the Cuna Canal as it traverses over the site. The subdivision is going to be built out in seven phases, as stated in the staff report. Upon annexation, the applicant proposes a zoning designation of R6 for the site. The actual net density is 4.83 dwelling units per acre. The applicant has submitted all of the required documents for these requests. They complied with city staff's recommendations for modifications to the preliminary plat. I apologize, I cannot talk tonight. I would like to point out the fact that this is the fourth or fifth iteration of the project's design. So the applicant has really made some extensive revisions in order to accommodate the city's and both ACHD and ITD's recommendations as well. Property owners within 300 feet of the site were mailed notice of tonight's hearing, and the legal notices ran in two publication cycles of the CUNA Melbourne News. ACHD's final staff report was just approved. It was April 5th, so just under a month ago. The city engineer provided recommendations for the required improvements and modifications to the submitted construction plans very early in the process, and those recommendations are brought forth in the proposed conditions in the staff report. Subdivision annexation and design review was actually received by the Planning and Zoning Department in September of last year, which signifies a concerted effort by the applicant to vet all the issues early on and make sure the project is a good fit for the area and for CUNA as a whole. Based on staff's review of the applications, Planning and Zoning would conclude it fully complies with Title 6 of CUNA City Code for subdivisions and Title 5 for zoning regulations. It provides for several goals and policies for private property rights, land use, transportation and connectivity, housing and community design within CUNA's comprehensive plan. The applicant received design review approval by the commission on April 11th. Staff would forward a recommendation of approval to the council with conditions as stated in the staff report, and any additional conditions you might see as necessary here. With that, I'll stand for your questions.
Okay. Thank you, Trevor. Questions for Trevor?
Could you really briefly maybe tell us what some of the – you said this is the fourth iteration, and that they made a lot of changes pursuant to requests by various entities. Could you, like, nutshell what those were?
I'll try to nutshell it for you. Thank you for the question. The first application and the first preliminary plat design – came forth with I believe the primary entrance was on the north, which is on Ardell, the Ardell extension. There was no proposal to extend Ardell all the way to the highway. It was only going to bring Ardell to the end of the development along Ardell's extension. It wasn't proposed to go through to the highway at that time. The second application proposed that the K Avenue extension northward, and this was actually a suggestion by one of the transportation agencies to make K Avenue kind of do a jog and then meet back up in the mid-mile. So it had a curvy linear effect to K Avenue as it traversed north. The city engineer and planning and zoning were really opposed to that, especially the city engineer, because the city's utility master plans really has put forth that we keep the utilities in the city's original grid. Those mid-mile collectors should stay in place. So the applicant came back again with a third iteration, which put that K Avenue mid-mile collector where back where it should have been. But the main entrance was now on the south side on Deer Flat, but it was more towards the high school, towards K Avenue, and that didn't really work for us because we thought, you know, for circulation patterns along that, along Deer Flat, which is an arterial, we wanted to space those out nicely. So I think on the fourth one, we had the main entrance was moved over easterly towards the profile, you know, where Ridley's is behind there. So the main entrance really is probably where it should be because it aligns with a future roadway that will go behind Ridley's that will connect to the theater and the proposed Bi-Mart there. So we'll have a nice connection there, which will also provide for pedestrian connectivity to Commercial Center as well. Other than that, there's just been some minor tweaks within the subdivision provided for the engineer's comments, pump sites, ponds, that sort of thing. So the one that you have in front of you is well vetted, I should say.
All right, thank you.
Mayor,
okay. Go ahead.
Just one question, Trevor. The Ardell extension is to go to the highway only and not to connect to 10 Mile also.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Mayor,
yes.
I got a quick question, Trevor.
Yes.
On the findings of fact, it shows 348 single-family lots, 35 common lots. The agenda says 342 residential lots, 33 common lots. Which one is correct?
The former. I'm looking at the findings now, and I do apologize. There was some confusion at the Planning and Zoning Commission exactly because when the application was originally submitted, the former number that you mentioned, larger of the lots, was the original application. The lots have been reduced down to 342, and then we're down to those the 33 common lots.
Okay, so the findings of fact were incorrect, but the agenda is correct.
The agenda is correct. Bear with me just a moment. I'm looking through the findings that I have. Are you on page 2?
I'm on page, let's see where I was.
I can bring the findings up that I have.
I'm on page 107 of 152, 6A.
And I don't have your entire packet in
page,
front of me.
Page 87 shows the 342 buildable and 33 common.
Which would be referenced as page 2 of 11?
Page 7 of 11 is what I'm seeing here under H. 342 and 33 common.
The agenda is correct. It is 342 and 33 common.
So okay.
I apologize for the discrepancy, Councilor
okay.
Cardoza.
Thank you. I have one more question, if I could, Mayor.
Yes, go ahead.
And I've been looking for it, and I don't see it. I thought I had seen where the breakdown of homes was, I thought, 3.2 homes per acre. Does that sound correct?
On the preliminary plat, and uphill, excuse me, I'm just dropping through here. The first page of the submitted preliminary plat gives a breakdown of the densities. And under the land use summary, this is the residential density is 3.08 dwelling units per acre. 3.08 dwelling units per acre.
Okay. Thank you, Trevor. Thank you, Mayor.
Mayor, may I have one more
question? Yes, go ahead.
Trevor, does the plat contain a minimum square footage?
As far as lot size?
Yeah, and the reason I'm asking is on the application, it shows a minimum square footage of structure at 6,600 square feet. So I'm trying to, I'm assuming that is not correct.
I'm assuming so, but planning zoning code doesn't really have anything to do with minimum house sizes or anything like that. Are we talking about lot size?
I'm just wondering, I guess my legal question is, are we bound by the application of what's written on the application, or does that need to be resubmitted with the correction?
No. Okay. The applicant would be bound by the conditions set forth in this meeting tonight.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay. Anything further for Trevor? Okay. Thank you, Trevor.
Thanks.
All right. So we'll go ahead and open up the public hearing portion of this meeting. Once again, was there anyone who didn't get to sign in who wishes to? Yeah. Okay. If you want, go ahead and sign up. Here, I'll let you. Trevor, actually, could you take this back for this gentleman right in the front row here? Chief, did you see any mountain lions today? Okay, good. Appreciate that. All right, very good. Thank you. And you didn't check. Did you wish to testify? Okay. All right. So first we'll start with Christy Watkins with JUB. Thank you.
Christy Watkins. I am a planner with JUB Engineers. I'm representing the developer tonight. Our address is 250 South Beechwood Avenue. Just as follow-up to the question, the 6,600 square feet is the lot size. It's the minimum lot size, not the structure size.
And that's my favorite,
probably
yeah.
Just an oversight.
Yeah.
All right, thanks. So anyway, I just want to follow up. Thank you, Trevor. That was a wonderful summary of the project. We did have requirements from ITD to put in a southbound right turn lane on Highway 69 at both West Ardell and Deer Flat Roads, and we are happy to comply with that. ACHD had recommendations for road widths and whatnot for Ardell and K, and we're happy to comply with those. As of last week, when we received the findings of fact and conclusions of law, we reviewed those with Trevor, and we're agreeable with the conditions that are set forth there. With that, I'd like to thank you for considering our project, and if you have any questions for me, I'd be happy to answer.
Okay. Question.
Mayor, I have one.
Okay.
Ardell, when it hits Highway 69, mm-hmm. will it only be a right turn there, or will they be going across four lanes of traffic north?
Well, they're only requiring us to widen it enough to put in a right turn lane, but I don't know that they're going to be requiring a right turn only. We're still working with them on the access permit, and we haven't received their conditions back specifically for that yet, so
okay.
We're waiting to hear.
So there won't be a barrier to forbid traffic from going across all four lanes?
Not at this time, okay. I don't believe. You know, that may come later when the front piece, the east half
right.
of that develops out, but they haven't said anything yet.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mayor.
Okay. Further question? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, we have to sign up neutral, Rick Marino. If you would just state your name and address for the record, please.
Sure thing. Good evening, Council and staff. I'm Rick Marino, 855 Westford Road. I haven't seen the plat, so I'm not exactly sure, but I can help, I think, identifying the details that I'm concerned with. There's a canal that goes through there, and there's a weir that has a couple different head gates for irrigation for my property and Bradwater's property north of there. And what I'm concerned with is how that's going to be addressed as far as, is it going to be left alone or if it's going to be changed? The water delivery actually goes underground to a concrete ditch that goes along that canal, right where, comes up right about where our dell is now and goes north along the canal. I just don't know if that has been addressed, and if it has, if you guys know the details of it. And then if it, as it goes forward, if I could ask you guys to be diligent in watching for that thing to be somehow agreed to be made sure that there's water that's uninterrupted, depending on when the construction is going on.
And you said this is irrigation?
Yes.
Is that right? Okay.
Okay. We can, we'll address that with staff when we get them back up and find out. I believe they are required to deliver your irrigation, but we'll confirm that.
Okay. Yeah, better safe than sorry. Thanks.
All right, thank you very much. I'm sorry, did council have any questions for?
No.
Okay, thank you. Next signed up to testify neutral is Brad Waters. Again, if you would just state your name and address for the record. Thank you.
Ditto what Rick said. My head gate's there also within the subdivision, well within the subdivision, and the pipe runs a couple hundred yards, you know, at least 100 yards within the subdivision. We just wanted, like Rick said, due diligence that we still have access to it without going through it from the irrigation route.
Okay.
And it is outside the 28 feet that irrigation district. Put in their comments, what I read, 20 feet on the west side, 28 feet on the east side. we're about 35 feet outside. I just, you know, just would like someone to take a look at that. They would appreciate it. Thank you. Bye.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. And then lastly, we have one signed up here in opposition, Dick Hershey. Hersey, I'm assuming.
Hersey?
Hersey, all right, thank
Hersey
you.
Hersey has that second H. If I had second H,
you'd have chocolate bars.
Anyway, I only have one or two little thoughts, complaints,
okay.
Whatever we want to call it. I live, as you can see by my address, 2202 Meridian Road. I'm two-thirds away to where our dell would come out onto the highway.
Okay.
In a normal morning, not counting this 500 vehicles you're going to be putting in there, there's at least 10 to 15 cars lined up to make a left-hand turn at the signal light to try to get onto Meridian Road. It's a continued battle. The same thing happens when they come back in the evening. And if you're ever out there, and I don't know if you gentlemen have the privilege, young lady also, to drive in that direction. I don't have any experience driving. I've got almost 3 million miles in a logbook with 5, 6, 7 axle units of trucks hauling heavy equipment, 10 wide, you name it. So I've had a little experience with driving. That intersection is a problem today.
Uh-huh.
There's something on the books to make a four-lane intersection at Deer Flat and,
Meridian.
I'm sorry.
Meridian, the highway?
No.
Oh.
This end.
Linder.
Past the high school.
Yeah, Linder.
Linder, okay. Thank you. At any rate, they're going to widen that to a four-lane. I believe that if you're going to do this properly, the Deer Flat on the other end going on to Meridian Road should be no less than two lanes turning left, because that's the primary use of that intersection. One lane coming down, turning right, is not really going to do anything for you. It's just pacifying somebody a little bit. The other being Ardell, without a signal light, it's going to be a nightmare. Again, old truck drivers with bad habits, I'm constantly seeing the accidents that happen on Deer Flat and Meridian, and it's got a signal light. You're going to do this there at Ardell without a signal light? To me, if the state was in there, and that is a state road, and I think they have to have their two cents put in, not just the county, that silly thing will have a no less than two lanes turning left and more than likely two lanes turning right back onto Ardell. It'll have a signal light so that it can be negotiated. I would not want my wife out driving on that road at any given time during the rush hour if you allow it to happen like they're talking about. If that makes any sense, that's my only two bits for it.
Okay.
In the beginning, I got to throw that in too. Hubbard was considered to be the extension that Kay was going through, and they were going to come out at Hubbard, which I figured there'd be a signal light there.
Right.
You haven't got that either. So.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Okay. That's all I had signed up to testify. Christy, would you like to answer any questions or rebuts or anything?
Thank you again, Mayor and Council. As far as the irrigation questions go, when we submit for final plat, we also submit the construction drawings to the various irrigation districts that have jurisdiction over the utilities that or the facilities that go through.
Can you folks hear that okay?
Okay.
No. Can you pull the mic back a little to you there?
Okay.
Okay. Thank
better?
You.
Somebody's got to get right into it.
Heat it up.
There you go.
Okay. So, like I said, we will submit the construction drawings to the jurisdiction or to the irrigation district that has jurisdiction over the property or the facilities that run through the property. We do this with every subdivision that we have. We often enter into agreements with those jurisdictions just to make sure that we're handling it correctly. So if there is something there that needs to be moved or corrected or worked around, they're very, very thorough with their review, and they make sure that all of that happens. Construction can only happen in the off season, so it won't happen during irrigation season. They don't usually allow that unless you have, you know, some pretty expensive mitigation measures. So that, and we usually try to plan around that. As far as traffic is concerned, our traffic engineer is actually here, and he can probably answer some of those questions a little bit better than I can if you'd like to hear from him.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Do you, does council want to hear from the traffic engineer on that?
Mayor, I did have a couple of traffic questions. I don't know if he would like to answer. Okay.
All right. Thank you. Yeah, if you would state your name and address for the record.
Yes, my name is Dan Thompson with Thompson Engineers. My address is 181 East 50th Street in Garden City.
The question I've, I mean, obviously ACHD has gone through this and looked at it, and I trust their judgment. They, that's they're the experts of that. My concern that I have is the exiting of the subdivision. I am, you know, concerned about the left-hand turn lanes off of Ardell, left-hand turn out of Ardell onto the main highway. I'm also a little concerned about the stub street that comes out there to where the entrance for the shopping complex is, that I guess is in between K and the highway. I do know that most of the time in the morning the traffic backs up almost to that, so it's going to be very difficult for people to make that left-hand turn onto Deer Flat out of that subdivision during the commute hours. So I'm concerned that it's going to force them to either go up to Ardell and come out that way and put more traffic coming out, or they're going to have to go back into K. So I don't know if there's any I'm assuming, you know, ACHD has considered those. but I am very concerned about that as far as the potential for accidents. I just want to know what your comment is on that.
As noted in the staff report, that they are required to do some improvements to that intersection at Deer Flat and Meridian Road. The primary one would be the southbound right turn lane, but as they do that, they're probably going to have to move that signal pole there, and also they're going to require them to do some widening on Deer Flat. So I think what that's going to do is enable them to improve that condition there. We haven't worked out the design details of it yet, but I'm certain that's one thing they would look at. And that would improve that. But also what we discussed in my report was that in ACHD's five-year plan, and I think it's within the next 2 years, Hubbard will get a signal. And right now that's not signalized, and it's very difficult to get onto the highway there. But when that is signalized, that will be attracting traffic away from Deer Flat because it'll be another option for people to go. And that's going to relieve that also. And also the Ardell extension is also going to be a relief for that also. I mean, it is intended to relieve that congestion at that location, not just the eastbound left turn, but the southbound right turn. So
I guess just seeking some confirmation, I mean, these concerns have been brought up, right, and they will be addressed at some
Absolutely.
Point, obviously, later
yeah.
down the road.
This was on the ACHD's consent agenda.
Yeah.
It was pulled because one of the commissioners was concerned about the pedestrian traffic. And when he found out that there was a pedestrian on the trail adjacent to the canal, he was he felt better. I don't know if he was completely satisfied, but he liked that.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Further questions?
Mayor?
Yes.
Deer Flat is scheduled to be five lanes at one time. How long down the road do you think Ada County has projected that?
It's in their 20-year planning.
20 years?
It's toward the end of that, their current 20-year plan.
So okay.
In the late 2020s.
But you're saying Hubbard is 2 years away with a light?
That's in their five-year
okay.
plan.
5 year. Okay. Thank you, Mayor. Thank you.
All right. Further questions? Thank you very much. So we have a can we have a motion to close the public hearing portion?
We good? Okay. I move we close public hearing.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to close the public hearing portion of the meeting. Why are you smiling at me? Okay.
I was going to answer Councilman Cardoza's question.
Okay, go ahead.
The Deer Flat for the five
lane.
Yeah, I'm having somebody. We'll be in 2026.
2026
is what it's scheduled for currently.
Okay, very good. So we have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries. And the question is up for deliberation from the council.
Mayor?
Yes.
If I can direct this more to Brad and Dick, in the development agreement, it says compliance with Idaho Code Section 31-3805 pertaining to irrigation water is required. Irrigation drainage water shall not be impeded by any construction on site. Compliance with the requirements of the Boise Project Board of Control is required. So I don't think you'll have any trouble with your weirs anywhere along there during construction or thereafter, according to code. So,
okay.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Further deliberation.
Okay. Well, in terms of the comp plan, you know, let's see. I looked at the comp plan includes under land use goals and objectives that we have areas that include natural and developed open spaces with housing included, and that it's walkable and that sort of thing. So the fact that they're doing, what was it, like 14 acres of green space is nice. I noticed there's going to be at least one like park, as well as a pool and clubhouse that I assume is for that community. But it provides more amenities and things like that for the neighborhood. It helps us with our natural resources goals and objectives in terms of developing a green grid of trails. Also, not that it's the natural resource part, but provides for some additional pedestrian connectivity into the Ridley's complex, which is also something that I think we would be interested in doing. It's close to services and that sort of thing, so it'll help. We wouldn't have any issues with expanding our network. So to me, the request appears to be in compliance with the comp plan. Does anybody else have thoughts on that?
Mayor, if I may, I would concur with my fellow councilman. I like the idea of having the trailhead providing the pedestrian connection as close to schools, as close to businesses and future businesses that are coming in. So I do believe it meets a lot of our comp plan goals. I do have a little concern with traffic, but I will leave that to the experts that deal with that every day. If they feel they can make it work, then I'm willing to accept that. I think it's a good project, and I think it meets our requirements and meets our city code.
Okay. Anything further?
Mayor, I have one question to Wendy. Just out of curiosity, if we're going 3.8 dwellings per acre, why wouldn't it be called, or why would it not be an R4 instead of an R6?
It's due to the dimensional lot requirements of R4, which we will be changing in a ordinance coming up.
But if we accept the development agreement as an R6, they cannot increase the 3.8 houses per acre at a later date.
Well, a couple things there. First of all, a development agreement is not under consideration with this case. And if that's what you choose for 3.8 density, not to exceed that, then you can go ahead and condition it as such.
That would have to be in the motion then.
It would be a condition of approval.
Of acceptance. Okay. Thank you, Mayor.
Okay. Anything further?
Mayor, one other thing. Trevor, there was no recommendation from Planning and Zoning Commission, was there? I thought I saw something, but
Councilman Jones, are you aware of any? Asking for recommendations within the conditions?
Yeah, did they have any conditions based for their recommendation that you recall?
With regard to
and anything additional that they were requesting to be?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay, that's all. All right. Thank you.
I don't know who this question is for. Would there be a way that we could make sure to communicate with our neighbors about just how the irrigation stuff is going, or like what the plan is, or just to make sure? I mean, I know that we talked about, okay, there's not going to be any construction like during irrigation season, so they wouldn't have to worry about an interruption like mid-season. But then assuming that, you know, if anything needs to get moved, it would happen off-season, whatever, just so that they feel like they don't have to go out and check it all the time just to see, like, did something change? Is this going to impact? Is that something that would be difficult to do? Or would it be done through city somehow? Or what do you think would be the best?
Yeah, please come up. It wouldn't necessarily be difficult. I mean, we can get a copy of the sign-in sheet. We can offer our business cards, and they can email us, and then we can keep them up to date on the construction schedule.
Do you guys think that would help alleviate some of the concerns you had about that access being impacted? Can somebody come
okay,
up?
But if yeah. We're going to have to open the public hearing again if we're going to have this kind of interaction here. So I think basically what the question is if you have contact with them, will that help alleviate your question? I mean, then you have someone you have contact with, the question, and that type of thing.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
I guess my last question will be, do we need to include that in our decision, or are you committed to going ahead and doing that? Perfect. Thank you. You had something?
Okay, thank you.
Mayor, I have one more question, and I think it's probably addressed to Bob. Under the estimate of tax revenue generation on page 65, or maybe it's 64, I don't see the impact fee for the parks and recreation on here. Is it foregone, or is it just... left off by accident. Okay.
Councilman Cardoza, it would not, an impact fee paid at the time of building permit for a home would not be considered tax revenue. Those are impact fees that are specific to the Parks Department to maintain the level of service of park facilities for residents within the city limits.
It's not considered a one-time fee, then?
It is considered a fee, but it is not tax revenue.
Okay. But it
but
will be applied to this subdivision?
It will be applied to every single new
residential
building permit
okay.
within this development.
Okay. Thank you, Bob.
Okay. Further deliberation.
Okay. So based on the facts outlined in the staff report and the testimony and discussion we've had here, I move we grant approval of case numbers 16-03-S and 16-06-AN for the Winfield Springs residential subdivision with the conditions of approval that are listed in the packet.
Second.
Okay, motion is made and seconded to approve 16-03-S and 16-06-AN. Is there any further discussion? Yes.
Sorry, Wendy. I didn't mean to smile. Just for clarification, is the 3.8 density part of the motion?
No.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Is there any, so we have that motion. Is there any further discussion? Okay. Chris, would you poll the council?
Council President Cardoza?
Yes.
Council Member Jones?
Yes.
Council Member Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Council Member McPherson?
Yes.
Okay, that motion carries. Thank you all very much. The next item then is that public hearing and consideration to approve 16-04-S TNT subdivision. Planning and zoning staff request this item be tabled until the May 16, 2017 City Council meeting.
I move we table, sorry. I move we table the hearing, public hearing in consideration to approve 16-04-S, the TNT subdivision, until our May 16th meeting.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to table the 16-04-S subdivision until the May 16th, 2017 City Council meeting. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Business items. Consideration to approve resolution number R35-2017, amending the 2015 City of Cuna, Idaho future land use map. Trevor Kessner.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, council members. I'm not sure why this was on the public hearing. Findings of fact are typically approved with the consent agenda, but this was presented to you at your last city council meeting and was approved by you with no additional conditions. So it should be in your packet as findings.
Okay. So normally this would be a consent agenda item.
This is amending the map associated with the previously approved comp plan map amendment. Honestly, I have nothing to say about this, really. You guys saw this at your last meeting. You're just changing the future land use to commercial instead of medium-density residential on that corner of 10 Mile and Deer Flat there.
Right.
I remember well.
Yeah.
All right. I move we approve resolution R35-2017.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve resolution number R35-2017, amending the 2015 City of Cuna, Idaho future land use map. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Item 7B, consideration to approve resolution number R36-2017, authorizing a GoFundMe account. Chris Ingalls.
Thank you, Mayor, Council. In my request for consideration, I've included a memo explaining that as downtown continues to move forward with construction, the infrastructure itself, the sidewalks, the streets, the lighting, the electricity, all those things are accounted for in the construction and the grant money. The request is to establish a GoFundMe account to make it easy for potential donors that maybe want to donate on a smaller scale to participate in downtown. The goal of this fundraising is to truly reflect more of the vibe of CUNA in a more artistic way. Attached to it is the different options that are available, different funding levels, and also the possibility of a contributor monument or a stone or something along those lines, that the donors at a certain level and above, then they would be put on there as participants in the funding of downtown. And I stand for any questions.
Okay, questions for Chris.
I have a couple.
Sure.
Do you know with our current website whether we have the ability to host something like this on our own?
John and I have talked a couple times. I think it's called Forms. I think that the difference in the two are the, like on GoFundMe, it shows who's donated and how much, and it has the graphics of showing, you know, we're getting this much closer to our goal. And I do not believe our ability to do that is in place. I don't think we're robust enough for that in our website.
Do you know whether any banks that we currently use have the ability to host something like that? I mean, I understand that the interest is twofold, that it's the presentation of it, that we just like the look of GoFundMe, and then I assume the second piece is being able to accept electronic funds.
Correct.
Okay. So my main concern is that GoFundMe, to my knowledge, takes fees.
8%.
Right. So at a minimum, I would want us to use maybe like YouCaring or another one that doesn't take fees.
Okay.
Just so we can make sure that, you know, every dollar that people donate is actually going to it. But if we do, I mean, if there's a way that we can host it on our own website, I think that would be my personal preference, partially from the perspective of legitimizing it.
Certainly.
That no, you know, there wouldn't be any question about whether it was really us. But also because, you know, we spend a lot of money on the website, and I like to get people trained to look at it more and more. And so the more resources we have on there and the more things of interest that are there, hopefully the more likely people are to start turning to it as an information resource. So if there was any way that we could host something on our site, or at a minimum, I guess, if we're forced to use an external platform, if maybe in our publication materials, I don't know if this seems like it would end up decreasing the amounts of donations or not, but if we could route them to the City of Kuna website where maybe we would include information and then they'd click there to get to the UK. I don't know if if that would work or what, but I feel like that would help somehow legitimize it so people are confident that, like, this really is the City of Kuna that's asking you for money on a crowdfunding platform, because it's kind of unusual, I imagine people will think.
You know, I think we can look at our website. I can get with John a little bit further on the forms. Is that what it's called, John? Forms? Yeah. I can get with John a little bit further on the forms. Maybe we can see if maybe we can establish our website as the platform. I want to talk to John also a little bit about the potential costs for running the electronic payments so that we're, you know, staying aware of that. And then I can also look at youcaring.com. I'm not opposed to that. We did look at CitizenVestor. That wasn't really the right fit for us, just based on the funds. It's just how their program works. So, I mean, we're happy to look at other options. I don't think that GoFundMe is
a must.
Yeah, it's not a must. Okay. We're just, I think, really our goal is to have council's permission to do some kind of platform that's effective to make it easy to just use a card to donate. Not everybody wants to, you know, drop off cash or a check or mail it in. So.
Okay. And then, yeah, I guess, so in terms of also just making sure, I have friends who've administered things on, like, YouCaring before, but I've never done it, so I don't know what the back end looks like. But I guess just making sure whatever platform we use captures sufficient information that, for example, we could provide receipts or that sort of thing, because, you know, it's going to show up on their credit card or whatever as YouCaring and not like City of Kuna.
Right.
So for tax purposes and just all that kind of stuff, and for acknowledgement purposes, I just want to make sure we're covered on that front.
Absolutely.
Okay, very good. Further discussion?
Mayor, I had a couple questions. What is our plan if we don't reach the goal?
The plan, if we don't reach the full goal, is to fund what we can.
Please, Mayor, allow me a little leeway. This is the first I've seen of this project. I just had a couple questions. Regarding, it looks like a lot of stuff is custom. So I would assume we would have to solicit vendors to make this for us. I'm curious of how we are going to do that.
So the items on the sheet, the custom items, one of the members of our group, there's six or seven of us, has actually been working with a fabricator to try and get a reduced price on some of these custom items. So that's how those dollar amounts have been established.
But our intent is only to use that person, or are we going to allow other vendors to come in and...
Did you want us to do a full RFP on these items? I mean, I guess I'm not sure what your question is.
I guess I probably would consider that. I just wanted to make sure that everybody is willing to participate who'd like to be able to make something for this streetscape that has the ability to do it. I know there are some vendors and even some citizens that do artwork with metal. I just want to see, you know, if somebody, if we have an artist who does artwork, that they're maybe allowed to be considered to design something.
These are laser cut items, so mm-hmm. we would need the, whoever to have laser cutting tools, yep. you know, to be able to the CNC and program them all that. I certainly can get with the rest of the group and establish, you know, if it's feasible to put out an RFP, and certainly, you know, if certainly if that's able to, and we're, you know, there's somebody that can, you know, or people that can respond because they have the right equipment. I mean, we're more interested in the vitality of CUNA than we are about handpicking a vendor.
The last question I have, I see on here that one of the items that is the flower pots, I assume that you're wanting to put along the roadway. And I believe from what I've gathered that the current flower pots were donated on behalf of citizens of the city to be put on Main Street. Are those flower pots now being removed? Or what are we doing with the
flower pots? If I understood correctly, it wasn't the flower pots that were donated, but somebody can jump in, but it was the trash cans were funded by group funding. And so there is brass plates on each of the trash mm-hmm. cans, if you've noticed those. And so our intent is to try and to reincorporate those brass plates back into downtown in some form or another.
So you're not aware of the flower pots being donated to the city?
Bob, you want to jump in?
The flower pots were donated to the city, and those will be reallocated to other areas down by the Greenbelt. If I remember right, Bobby was talking about wanting to put some on the Greenbelt and then just other areas in town, but they will be used still, just reallocated to different locations.
I would just ask that the consideration of the people that donated those for Main Street are somehow either notified or brought in that they are being moved off of and where they're going, just so maybe they would possibly have some input. Or I don't want to think that the flower pots are no longer valid or needed, and I'd like to make sure that their donations were still taken into consideration and respected, I guess.
Yeah, we can definitely do that.
All right, thank you. Mayor, that's all I had. Thank you.
Okay. Anything further?
Any other questions?
No. So what is the direction here? If we're not going to do the GoFundMe, do we want to do some further research on this and then get back to council, or are you looking for an authorization to get something
going?
If
council would like me to do some more research and come back with the different options, I'm happy to do that. I probably would be the next meeting or the meeting after.
I would appreciate that. Just,
sure.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you.
No problem.
Okay. Is that good with everybody else?
Yeah.
All right. Very good. Thank you. Item 7C, consideration to approve John V. Lerway as the new Planning and Zoning Commissioner, whose term will expire November 1, 2018. Wendy Howell, Planning and Zoning Director.
I really don't have anything else to add. His letter of interest is included in your packet. I'm excited that he's interested and willing to help us out.
And he's wearing a pretty purple shirt.
My favorite color.
I move we approve John Lerway as the new Planning and Zoning Commissioner with a term that will expire on November 1st, 2018.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve John Lerway. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed?
Cardoz is just biting his tongue over there.
Motion carries. Thank you. Thank you, John, for stepping up and doing that for us. We appreciate it very much.
After reading the letter, Mayor, I would want him to take a lie detector test that he actually wrote it, not his wife. So.
It didn't say there that he didn't write it. He did write it. All right, very good. Discussion on title search for a Union Pacific Railroad property. Bobby Withrow.
Mayor, Council. So I, as you know, I've been working on trying to see if Union Pacific will work on us purchasing the Greenbelt. One of the biggest obstacles is, before we talk actual prices, they want to make sure there's no underlying property owner because of the way they got their right-of-way through the area that we lease for the Greenbelt. Spoke with a representative, and she said that she's worked with NAMPA a couple times, and they've used Title I. So I called up Title I, and they gave me basically a quote of what it would cost for them to do a title search. So I would like your blessing to move forward with this so we can see if we can actually buy the Greenbelt instead of leasing it.
Yeah, I was actually quite impressed that Bobby was able to get some response from Union Pacific Railroad, and that young lady came out from Nebraska. Was it Nebraska?
Yeah, Nebraska.
And, to talk to him about it. And, I guess one of the main reasons we're doing this is that lease is about ready to expire, so we'd have to renew that. It would also give us the ability to do with that property what we want to do with that. So, like we were talking at one point about putting a splash pad down there, and then found out that that wasn't authorized under Union Pacific rules. So,
I just have one question.
Yeah.
Is there any chance that, I mean, I'm surprised they sent somebody out to talk about it. That makes me feel like they're pretty motivated to sell it. Is there any chance that they would go halvesies on the title search cost?
No. They're pretty one-sided. So basically, if this is something that we want, then we need to do the legwork. So yeah, she was. she did say that they would help if we actually came to terms with a number, as far as the acquisition price. If we were in somewhat of agreement to buy it at that, then they would help with the title search.
So discount it, basically? Okay.
Bobby, can you kind of give me an overall idea of the area of the property? Are we just Greenbelt from Swamp Falls to Bridge, or past Bridge behind us?
It would be from Swamp Falls, from the creek to the edge of the baseball fields. Mm-hmm. Kind of a diagonal line to the edge of our city hall right here.
Okay.
All the way to Indian Creek.
And there's no railroad property on the other side of Swan Falls?
No. Okay. No. There was a little sliver, but it didn't have anything to do with it. Ada County actually had that, okay. And so we got that from Ada County.
So if this were to materialize, we would have all of our Greenbelt would be city-owned?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Yes.
Bobby, is this holding up the splash pad?
No. No, no, this isn't holding it up at all. I'm waiting on DEQ.
Well, work your magic. It worked with the railroad.
I'm trying.
If you have any problems with DEQ, would you ask John B. Laraway to look into it for us?
Thank you. I absolutely will.
Welcome aboard, John. Okay, anything further?
So, I mean, you said you're not asking for funds or anything, so what do you need from us? Just, like, that sounds good?
Yeah, just I just want your consent.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Get it done.
Thank you.
Okay.
Do we need to vote on this, Mayor, or just, okay.
Thank you. Last item is the one we've added, item D2, R34-2017. Pat, you had questions there?
Yeah, and I don't know who to address this to. I guess I'm confused as to why we're adopting a lease that started 6 months ago.
Councilmember Jones, that just came in the mail with the check. A lot of times these farmers, what we're finding, we send the leases out, and they will not worry about it until their season starts, and then they'll sign them and send in the check. So we just processed it as we got it. We may consider changing the schedule to start in the spring on those. We were putting it on so it followed our fiscal. Obviously, when we send those out towards the September-October timeframe, it's not pressing for them. They're winding down their operations for the year, and they may not exactly know what they're going to be doing for the following year. So the consideration is to put those all on a spring commencement schedule.
I guess I'm a little concerned with that, being that especially that this property, from what I can tell, doesn't have any specific requirements like the property next to the sewer farm. I'm just concerned that if he doesn't renew it, then we've lost the 6 months to possibly find somebody else to lease the property from us. Being it, especially since it specifies that he is to request the renewal 90 days before the expiration, I guess I'm just wondering why we wouldn't have put that out there to possibly have another lessee come in and lease the property from us.
We may do that on another piece of property. I think this one's unique in the size of it compared to the property that's being farmed around it. We would have a difficult time having a farmer come in separate from the other property that's being farmed. It's not big enough, and it's got rocks on one side of it, so all 20 acres are not being farmed. A portion of that is not able to be farmed. So I think we're kind of lucky right now with what we've got going on versus going out and trying to get somebody else to come in and do that small piece.
Well, I guess I'm wondering if the other, being that the lessee doesn't even contact this property from what I can tell, if the farmers that are next to it would like the opportunity to use that property as part of their farm since they abut against it.
My understanding is the lessee in this case is also leasing the other property, and that's why it works out.
And then I'm curious as to why we are only leasing the farmable and not the whole property, as in, I guess where my concern is having a lease that I guess there's confusion that we're stating it's 17 acres, yet the county assessor assesses it at 20 acres. Why would we not just be charging for the full 20 acres, being that most leases you don't, I mean, I can't lease a property for rent a house and say I'm only using two-thirds of it and only want to pay two-thirds. So I'm going to understand why we're making that concession.
I was just going to say, but if you're renting a house and one of the rooms isn't fit for use or something, then your rent shouldn't include the use of that room.
I agree, but I don't know if that would apply to everything. I have never seen that, so that's why I'm just trying to understand it. I'm just trying to find the reasoning behind it. And if that's the case, then I guess I don't have an issue with it, but I'm just trying to figure out why it was set up that way.
Mayor, if I will, Paddy Farm also, obviously, as you know, and I have a field that's similar to this. Part of it is not farmable, even though it's part of a 40-acre chunk. The landowner charges me for what is actually farmable and what has a water right, which I'm not sure on the water right on this property particularly, but that's a pretty common practice where 18 of 30 is farmable. That's what they charge you rent for because the other is just useless ground, essentially.
If you don't want to answer this, but please say you don't want to answer this. What do you pay for an acre to farm?
Anywhere from the water bill to $150 an acre. Just kind of depends on the landlord and the quality of the property and such.
So the $100 is within reason.
Oh, definitely for that area, yes.
Yeah, I mean, if we're going to, I don't have a problem. I just have several questions. But, Richard, I would like to look into doing something to get these signed before they go into effect. It seems that I've looked the last couple of years that this one's getting later and later in the year before we actually sign a lease. If we're going to be obligated to providing payment for lost crops and stuff like that, I think that there should be on their part to do the same for us to follow what we're asking. I do have one question regarding number five that we're of this lease that we're going to be responsible to move some headgate and rerouting the pipe and such at city's expense and not at the lessee's expense. Number five, lessor's obligations.
Does that have to do with the storage buildings, that irrigation canal that was messed with over there?
Yeah, that's part of what we were having to do when I drafted this originally last fall. We had an issue with the location of the canal, with the storage facility damaging part of that, and then repairing it. So on the right-of-way, the canal right-of-way, there's two headgates. The city has the headgate to the west. The storage unit facility has the headgate to the east. Our headgate is crumbling and leaking and falling apart. And so that water leaks onto the storage facility's property. His headgate is in a little bit better shape, and it's farther down, maybe a couple hundred feet down to the east, which is now in alignment with the property edge. So what the plan is to swap, vacate the box that we own that's falling apart that we would have to repair because of the amount of water that leaks out of it, move that to the east, and then align that. Then the storage unit facility only has to put in one pull out and then tie it into our city property up there. So there's several things going on, but that's what that's dealing with. And really it comes down to the fact that our head gate, which is the box to the west, is failing, and we would be responsible for that. In fact, he had indicated quantity of water that was leaking out into his property at several times is pretty substantial. So we tried to work out an arrangement where we can align it with a property line, which is the easternmost box, and then get it over to our property more efficiently. He's put the pipe in underground because when he was out there excavating, he destroyed the canal that was there. So he's now underground it, but the pipe then bends back over to tie into our box. So.
And that's what happens when an attorney orders your irrigation water for you.
Noted.
So in summary, that's a cost that the city would incur either way.
Yes.
Okay. Right. Thank you.
Okay. Anything further?
And Mayor, I move that we approve Resolution R34-2017.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve Resolution R34-2017. Is there any further discussion? All those signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
I think that's it.
About 6 minutes, Wendy doesn't want to win.
Well, we have to still have discussion items. I can go 6 minutes. What do I get, half? Oh.
All right. I resemble that remark. Did any council members have any announcements? All right. Meeting adjourned. Thank
quick,
you.
Quick. When is the downtown going to start?
Soon?
It should start in June.
In June?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're waiting on DEQ.
Mayor, are we going to have an update on the hotel study?
Actually, what we're going to do is present that to the Economic Development Committee one more time. That's this Thursday, and make a further determination on that. So we will certainly let you know when we get that figured out.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Thank you all very much.